Well, I want to say hey to all of our Atlanta area churches, and for those of you who are watching online, for those of you who are in the building, and if this is your first time to tune in, if this is your first time to be at one of our churches, you could not have picked a better time to be here, because we're going to press pause on our regularly scheduled program and do something a little bit different, and the good news is you're going to get to peek behind the curtains and understand what we're really all about. So if you're like looking for a new church, we're going to kind of speed date you and kind of go right to the bottom line, so you'll kind of go, oh, well, that's not for me, or that is for me. We've just had four incredible series this fall. I mean, it's just been so fun, the OWN series, and we talked about Future Family, and we did the Free series. It was super spiritual kind of thing, and then came out of Be Rich and all the cool stuff there, and we're going to celebrate big time next weekend for Be Rich, so please be here on time, be here early. So today, what I want to do is just talk to you like if we were sitting across the table from each other, and just talk to the folks, to the church family a little bit. And if you're not a Christian or not a church person, again, this is so great that you're here, because you kind of get to sit on the second row and listen in at how crazy we are and what we're really up to. And if you think we have a secret agenda after today, it's not going to be a secret anymore, and we don't want it to be a secret anyway. This fall, Sandra and I have done something that's been a lot of fun for us. We have visited a bunch of different community groups. Now, if you're new, a community group is a small group that meets in a home, and that's basically the core of our church. We don't just meet in rows, we meet in circles. We love circles. And so we've visited some young marriage groups, some not so young marriage groups. Now, this week I'm going to go visit a single guys group, and there are several reasons we're doing this, and one of it is I never meet anybody. Because on Sunday, I hide, you know? Remember the church you grew up in, the pastor would stand at the back and shake everybody's hand? Can you imagine? You know, so yeah, so I do two services, and I go do one afternoon service at one of our churches, and I'm kind of an introvert anyway. And so anyway, so I don't do this. So I don't meet anybody. So we have met some incredible people just going to these groups. And it's fun. We've been married almost 25 years. And so you don't know how much you know about marriage until you meet with some couples who just got married. Because they don't know anything, and you're like, we really are experts. So that's been a lot of fun. But anyway, at the very first community group meeting we went to, where we just kind of showed up and, you know, we answer questions, talk about the church, ask them questions. At the very end, we were about to break for, you know, coffee and cake, which is why we actually go to community group. Most of us, it's like, okay, when's the cake? So we're finishing up, and this one young guy sitting on the couch with his wife, and they were all newlyweds for the most part, been married for 2 years or less. And he asked me this question. He said, Andy, what can we do? What can we do? And it kind of threw me off, because nobody ever asked me that. Everybody always asked me, when are we going to, and why don't you, and why didn't you, and why did you say that? And I get all kinds of interesting email. And one of my favorite things to do as a pastor of a large church is to freak people out by actually calling them. Because whenever somebody writes like a really negative, like, you know, what are you doing, bad email, I ask my assistant, I said, let's see if we can get a phone number. And I call them. Hey, it's Andy from church. And it's like, well, because see, people don't think I get my mail. They don't think I read it, and they definitely don't think I'm going to call them. So I love to just, hey, yeah. And what's so interesting is about half the time people have a complaint. I'm like, I know, I didn't like it either. You know, I agree. What should we do? So anyway, so those are the kinds of, that's the kind of response I get sometimes, which is okay. We can deal with it. But nobody ever says, hey, Andy, what can we do? And what he meant was this. We love the church. About a bunch of these couples actually met through our singles ministry, you know, so they love the church. We can't wait to have kids one day and raise kids in the church. And we feel like the church does so much for us. What can we do? So I thought, you know what, I'd like to just pause in all of the stuff we're doing for you and all the cool stuff we do as a church, and I would like to pretend, just go with me, humor me a little bit, I would like to pretend that you would like to know the answer to this question. So to help me, I'm going to actually ask you to ask this question corporately out loud, all of our churches, and I'm going to count to three, and I want you to just say, Andy, what can we do? And then I'm going to answer, okay? So even if you don't care, just play along, because this is what we're going to talk about today. So ready? One, two, three. Oh, I'm so glad you asked. Okay, here, I want to answer that question for you. This is important. Before I give you the answer, though, I want to tell you why this is such a big deal, okay? It's such a big deal for three reasons. The most apparent reason is there's some things we have to do as a church for us to have the church that we enjoy. And if you come here, you enjoy the environments, the music, all the stuff. So there's just some stuff we have to do so we get something out of it. That's the least important reason. Second reason, well, there's some things that we need to do, that you need to do, so that we can continue to be a place where it's easy to invite people who don't like church. That's why we built this church. We created a church unchurched people love to attend. That's why we did this. And so for us to continue to be that kind of church, there's some stuff we've got to do. But the most important reason from my perspective is the reason that I have the hardest time explaining, because you'd really have to live here or be on our staff for about 3 months to understand the incredible global responsibility that we have as a church. As many of you know, the church in America is changing. And the church in America is changing actually in a good way. And people are more interested in spiritual things than they've ever been before, but they're less interested in traditional church. You probably know that. And for this time and for this reason, or for this season, I should say, we have an incredible stewardship of influence. A stewardship of influence means that we have the opportunity to influence a lot of churches and a lot of church leaders. And every single Sunday, dozens, and over the course of a year, several hundred church leaders will come from all over the country, all over the world, to walk the halls. They don't come to hear me preach. They can watch online if they just want to hear a sermon. They come to walk the halls of all of our Atlanta area churches and some of our partnership churches to answer the question, what are you doing in order to capture the imagination of people who've lost interest in church? Because you do that so well. About 3 years ago, there's a group that came to me and said, Andy, how can we help you? I said, you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to spend a day, about 5 days a year, go to some different major cities and spend time with local pastors. And the way I describe it is just empty my cup into theirs. I don't have all the answers, but I can't fill anybody's cup, but it's like, okay, that's all I know about that. I would like to go spend time with pastors and say, here's what we've learned about creating a different kind of church. I thought we could gather 300 or 400, you know, pastors in some key cities. So I've been doing this for 3 years. I do it with Craig Groeschel, my friend in Oklahoma. And everywhere we go, we have 1,500, 1,800. We were in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. 2,500 church leaders came to spend a day with us. And you know what I tell them? Honestly, I just tell them what you do. I just tell them what you do so well. I tell them about the environment you create and what you've done to create an environment where people find it easy to invite people who don't consider themselves church people. People who, and maybe you're in this category, you come to our church and you go, I don't believe that, but I'll come back next week. I don't get that. I love this. Andy, I just filter out the Jesus part. I got a tweet from a Muslim guy. He said, I just filter out the Jesus part, and I just hum during the Jesus part, but you're a good motivational speaker. That doesn't offend me. I'm fine with that. So I just talk about what we do. The least church city in the United States right now is Seattle, Washington. And so we've been up there twice. 1,400 church leaders from that area came to say, we're trying to get this right in Seattle. And there's some great people up there, obviously Mark Driscoll and others, who are just knocking it out of the park. But there's this very cool thing that's happening in pockets. And the problem is, when you listen to the media talk about the church, the media talks about the Catholic Church and mainline church. We don't exist yet. But I'm telling you, I don't mean just we are churches, but there is something so phenomenal going on. And the part that you don't need to think about, because you've got kids to raise and jobs to keep and get an education, your participation is making a much larger difference than you will ever know because of our influence as a group of local churches. I want to tell you one quick story about Jose and Yesenia Rea. Jose and Yesenia, this is Jose. Jose is the pastor of a church in Venezuela. Here's the name of the church. It's La Iglesia Las Buenas Nuevas del Este, which is the good news of the East Church. And he's in Barquisimeto, Venezuela. That's the city that he's in. Now, I got to tell you a story real quick. Jose, in 1997, started a Bible study that became a church, and by 2005, now this is a big deal, by 2005, he had 1,200 people at his church, which is a lot. It's hard to start a church. It's really hard to grow a church to 1,200, and it's even really hard in Latin America, because there's some things working against you in Latin America as a church planner that we don't deal with here. So he's a great leader, did a great job. 2005, they got about 1,200 people. And it dawned on him, you know what? We're basically gathering a lot of disenfranchised church people. I want to reach people who are far from God and people who have issues with God and issues with the church. I want to figure out really how to reach unchurched people. And so he began looking for a different model, and he came to the United States. And he visited a bunch of different churches and was disappointed in some of the things that he saw. And he ran into a mutual friend who brought him to North Point Community Church, and he lit him up. He came later that year, in 2006, he came to our Drive Conference, which is a conference that we do for church leaders from all over the country and different parts of the world, and it ruined him. He saw something. It was sort of like, I knew this could be, I just needed to see it. He went home, got his leaders together, began to talk about it, brought all of them to a Drive conference, which cost a lot of money. And they walk the halls, and our leaders just talk about how we do what we do, and they just see what you do. And he went back, and he got his elders together, and he said, we're going to deconstruct our whole church. And they were considered a very successful church plant in his city, actually in Venezuela. He said, we're going to start all over. So this good leader strips them down, starts the whole thing over. And they, and this is in 2008, I guess, is when they launched. They relaunched. 2008, they went from 1,200, almost crashed the plane. Because people are like, we don't want to do that. That's too weird. That's too crazy. But he began to implement the environments that you create. In fact, here, check out these pictures. Does this look familiar? There you go. You know what I tell every church leader? I tell every church leader, I don't care how small your church is, you got to have people in the parking lot because the sermon begins in the parking lot. Put people in the parking lot. Check this next picture out. Look familiar? Look at that. They just lock, stock, and barrel. They adopted our entire model. He worked so hard. Another picture there. And so this is what happened. So they lost a third of their congregation in a month. Their money went down, the attendance went down. We started coaching him, and he was so teachable, and he wanted to get this right. And he said, you know what? I don't care what it takes. I want to create a church in my city that where unchurched people who are far from God can reconnect, and I'm going to figure this out. This year, their average attendance in their environment is 5,500 people, okay? Yeah. Now, in fact, this is so cool. Jose, they just did the first Drive conference for Latin America where he took our idea of a conference and replicated the conference and attracted leaders from all over Latin America to learn how to do church for unchurched people. Now, he did the hard work, but I'm telling you, you inspired him to do it. Now, you didn't know that. You're just showing up and kind of fighting the traffic, getting in, getting your kids in, finding your seat, doing your thing, putting on your cool t-shirt, teaching a class, you know, facilitating, taking up offering, sweating, you know, faders and switches, and you go home tired, and you think, I don't know how much longer I can do this. Nobody said thank you. They almost rode over me in the parking lot, you know. And mom's back there complaining because I didn't exactly get her diaper bag all put back together. Oh, good grief, a bunch of rich people, you know. And so, you know, you're just like, oh, I don't know if I can do this. I'm telling you. You have no idea the influence that you have simply by showing up and doing the blocking and tackling, the stuff that we do every single week. So if you were to say, Andy, what can we do? The word is engage. I need you to engage. Now, some of you are very engaged. Some of you are mildly engaged. And some of you are disengaged, okay? You like sitting in rows. You come for the show and you write down a few things and not, you know, elbow your husband or wife or your kids. And then you go home and have lunch and you went to church. I need you to take a big step and engage. And I'm going to give you four words. I don't usually preach through an outline, but I got just four words is sort of the bottom line of how you need to engage. And before I give you the four words, none of this is new. This is a football, okay? This is just basic stuff we talk about all the time, but I cannot exaggerate the importance of these simple things, and I need all of you to be willing to take a step and to engage, not simply so that we'll continue to like our church, not simply so we can continue to impact our communities around our Atlanta area churches, but there is a world of church leaders who's watching and they are taking their cue, not from me, they're taking their cue from what you do. Here's the four words, engage. I need you to connect, serve, give, and invite. Connect, serve, give, and invite. Specifically, I need you to connect in a group. Now, we talk about small groups all the time, and you think, well, Andy, is that just what preachers are supposed to do? No. Here's what you need to understand. Small groups, circles. We talk about circles are better than rows. Small groups, you know, accountability, belonging, care, praying together, doing life together is core. It is central. It is the essence of the Christian experience, not this. Okay, the thing that set Christianity apart from every other religion, especially the pagan religions of the first century. The pagan religions of the first century were all about, there's a God out there somewhere, I'm going to go to God's temple, I'm going to sacrifice a sheep, I'm going to cut the throat of a bird, I'm going to leave gold, I'm going to leave an offering, I'm going to leave a child, I'm going to leave something, and I'm going to somehow try to capture the affection and the favor of Jupiter or Zeus or whoever they were praying to. Jesus came along, and he said, it's different with me. The way that you're going to show your devotion to God is by the way you treat one another. Christianity is at its core all about one another. That the way you know you love God is not how well you love invisible, intangible God. It is how you love one another. And the problem is church, and I understand this, and you don't have time for a history lesson, the local church always gravitates toward put more people in rows, make it all about this person, make it all about a building, make it all about this. But when you read the New Testament, Jesus didn't do that. Jesus said, no, it's all about this. In fact, here's how he said it. A new command I give you, you remember this, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. And then here is the kicker. By this, by loving one another, by this everyone will know that you're my disciples if you, one more time, love one another. Jesus, what's your point? My point is the way people are going to know that you're following me is not by how you treat me. It's not even going to be about necessarily how you talk about the Father. It's going to be about the way you treat each other. So here's the bottom line. The reason I want you in a group and the reason that this will help us and help you if you get in a group. The way we one another is by being in a group. That's how we one another. That's how we do it here. And it's not an add-on, it's not a periphery, it's not, well, I go to church and I got in a group. It's the essence. In fact, one of the questions I get asked sometimes is, Andy, hey, what happens to the church if something happens to you? And what they mean is they think that the whole thing's built around me and my personality and I'm the speaker, and if something happened to me, you know, what's gonna happen? And I love the question because I love my answer. So here's my answer to the question. I say, let's make it worse than that. Let's say something happened to me and all the staff. And simultaneously, all the church buildings burn to the ground and we have no insurance. They kind of look at me like, I said, let's just make it worst case scenario. I said, let me tell you what's going to happen. On Monday night, Tuesday night, Thursday night, thousands of people are going to gather in homes all over our communities. And they're going to pray together, and they're going to open God's word together, and they're going to take care of each other, and they're going to love each other, and they're going to help mamas that are having babies, and they're going to provide meals, and they're going to do stuff in the community. Some of them are going to have communion together because the church has never been and never will be facility dependent or personality dependent, ever, not the real church. So I'm not worried about me because it's not about any particular person. The church is all about one another. It is the thing that captured the imagination of the first century pagans who couldn't understand these Christians who just loved one another. So if you're going to be a part of what we do, it is absolutely critical that you not be satisfied with rows, that somehow you find yourself in a circle where you're doing life with one another, because it is the essence of the Christian faith and it is the essence of the local church. So the best way to do that is this horrible environment that is an excellent environment once you get through it called GroupLink. I only say it's horrible because you're scared to death, because you show up and you don't know anybody and your husband's pushing you in there and he's waiting in the car and you tell me how it goes and everybody's worried. And I'm telling you, when we met with all these different community groups this fall, I think all but one of the groups we met with, they all met each other at GroupLink. And when we met them, they looked like they were all part of a fraternity or sorority, or they'd all grown up together in the same neighborhood. They were so connected. And it happened with GroupLink. So in January, if you are not currently in a circle, if you are not in a group, we want to help you get connected. This isn't something that we get credit for. We don't win awards for. We just think it's so important. We put a lot of time and effort and money in getting people in circle. The second thing, if you said, Andy, you know, what can we do, is this. I want you to serve on a team. Now, here's why. If you think about, for those of you who are in the marketplace and who work and own business, or you work in a business or in your particular industry, in your industry or in your company, there are transactions that are mission critical. In other words, your company does a lot of different things, but there are some things, if your company gets these right, then everything goes right, everything goes well. If you get these, you know, it's just two or three or four things. If you get, you know, it's customer service, or it's, you know, a product that makes sure once you sell it, they don't come back and they're not returning stuff, whatever your business is. There are certain transactions that are so mission critical. If you just get these right, everything else can be solved later. For us, the transactions that we've got to get right, the mission critical, got to get it right every time, are what happens on the weekends as it relates to these environments right here. Our guest services teams, our production teams, Womaland, that's, you know, birth through about four-year-old, Upstreets, our children's ministry, small groups, transits, middle school, inside outs, high school. This is blocking and tackling. This is the core. If we get these environments right, anything else that we mess up, we can fix later on. This is, as I tell church leaders, the secret sauce of our church is not my preaching. The secret sauce of our church is that. This is what keeps people coming back. This is where people stick. This is where people have an aha moment. This is where they say, you know what? I didn't really like the message, but my kids love the environment, and my husband said it's the first time he didn't fall asleep in church. We're coming back. This is, and I'm telling you, this is where we need you to step up and get involved. Now, when you see that, I know what some of you think. I've been doing this a long time. It's like, well, you know, I don't want to babysit, and I'm not a teacher, so just hear me. We're not going to ask you to do something you're no good at. And here's why. You're no good at it. Okay? The last thing we're going to do is put you in a room with kids and bore kids to death with the Bible. We want kids to want to come to church. And most children, here's the lesson they get every single Sunday in church. Some of you can relate to this. The Bible's boring, God is boring, church is boring. Come back next week, children, for another dose of God is boring, the Bible's boring, the church. And then they go to college and we wonder why they never go to church. They're just applying what we taught them for 12 or 13 years. So don't worry. If you're not an interesting person, we're not about to put you in with a bunch of kids, okay? The good news is there are so many things you can do within this context where we can leverage your skill set. And these environments have got to be hitting on, you know, all cylinders 100% of the time every single weekend. And they do. That's why you love this church. I need and we want more of you to find a way to engage right here, because this makes all the difference in the world. The other area that I need you to engage is the third was to give a percentage. Now, here's the cool thing. We just finished at Be Rich. And, you know, it was so much fun, and $39.95, and we gave millions of dollars, and we give it all away. But here's the thing about Be Rich. Look at this. It took us 17 years to raise $4.7 million in a week. It took 17 years to raise $4.7 million in a week. And it took 17 years to create an organization that was organized enough and sophisticated enough and focused enough to be able to raise and give away $4.7 million in a week. And the reason we were able to raise and give away $4.7 million in a week is because there have been thousands of people through these 17 years who said, you know what? I'm going to trust you, and I'm giving a percentage of my money to my local church because I don't care if it goes to paying electric bills. I know that's not sexy, but I don't care. I don't mind paying bills. I don't mind paying salaries. I don't mind changing bulbs. I don't mind paying for carpet. I don't mind getting the grass cut. You don't have to count on me to try to do something spectacular with every dollar. I understand what it takes to run an organization. I love the mission and vision of this church. I just want to be a steady plotter. Most Americans and most Christians give what we call giving 1.0. Giving 1.0 is somebody like me gets up and says, come on, come on, come on, come on. Here's pictures of, you know, starving children, and here are the needs, and I make you cry, and then I give you a credit card swiper, and it's $39.95, and you're like, I'm going to go $49.95 or $59.95. Then you get in the car and think, what have I done? I couldn't afford that. But the emotion of the moment, you know, you get all charged up. That's giving 1.0. That's fun. That's good. That's what you do at the office. And, you know, people come to your home and you're selling stuff. That's good. You should do that. But giving 2.0 is what changes the world. Giving 2.0 is when you say, you know what? I'm committed to the mission and vision of this organization, and I'm going to be a regular giver in order to make sure the mission and the vision of that organization is successful. Giving 1.0 is what you call intervention giving. That is, I'm going to intervene. There's a problem. I want to help solve a problem. Giving 2.0 is better, because giving 2.0 says, I'm going to give so there never is a problem to begin with. Giving 1.0 helps us find places for kids who are in foster care to go. Giving 2.0 makes sure that families stay together so their kids never go into foster care to begin with. Giving 1.0 is where you help women get out of sex slavery and where children are being shuffled around into all kinds of horrible environments. Giving 2.0 does something for families in other countries so their children are never taken out of their home to begin with. This is easier to raise money for because it's very emotional. This is better to raise money for because this prevents people from suffering in ways they shouldn't have to suffer anyway. And here's the thing. A healthy local church is a great investment because it is preventative giving. It keeps people from having the problems that you have to give money to through other organizations to address those problems. Now, if you've been here long enough, you know this. We do both. We will always do both. Christians are called to do both. But in order to keep these organizations growing, and in order to help us continue to create great churches that do both kinds of giving, it depends on people like me, because I've been doing this since we started, and people like many of you who've been willing to be percentage givers, not just emotionally driven, reaction driven givers. That's why we're where we are today. Now, last thing I need you to do is invite a friend. Now, if you were to say to me, Andy, what is your biggest concern about our churches? It wouldn't be money. It wouldn't be staff. It wouldn't be what are we going to preach about next week? You know, all those pressures, you know, we kind of absorb. My biggest concern from the very beginning is my primary concern now. My biggest concern is that we get so big and so full and so exciting and so organized that we turn our focus inward instead of remaining with a focus that is outward. And here's why. I've been doing this a long time. The gravitational pull of every church, of every local church, is toward keeping people rather than reaching people. It just is. The gravitational pull of every local church, ours, every church, is toward keeping the people that are there as opposed to having their backs to each other and their eyes to the marketplace to reach people who have yet to be reached. We started our church. We started these churches. The reason we keep creating churches is because we are committed to what we believe Jesus taught the church was all about. And it wasn't about church people, because there weren't any church people. It was about people people. It was about people created in the image of God who were far from God, who needed a Savior. So consequently, our focus is not the people who are here. It's the people who aren't here yet. And I need you to invite people. Now, here's why. It's not because we need more people. This is so important. I'll try to make this clear. The reason I need you to be an inviter is because when you sit through one of our services with someone who doesn't normally go to church, you experience our service and our environment in a way that you would never experience it otherwise. I mean, every once in a while I get the email, Andy, we only do 2 songs, and I like worship. My other church, we did 4 or 5 songs, and why can't we do more music? Why can't we do more music? Why can't we do more songs? Then that person shows up one Sunday with a neighbor who doesn't go to church anywhere. And about halfway through the second song, they're like, this is kind of going long. Because they don't know any of the songs, and they're kind of looking around. It's like, okay, I think 2's enough. 2's good. Why? Because they experienced our environments through the eyes and the ears of a person who's not a church person. I want you to have that experience. You will help hold us accountable to our mission and vision, and you will understand what we do in a way that you don't understand before. And here's the deal. Here's the deal. We all have a network, small or large network of people who used to be church people, who used to follow God, who don't, who never have, who've never heard. And the thing is, I know you. You're grateful for what God has done in your life. You're grateful for what God's doing in your family. You're grateful for the little itty-bitty incremental change you see in the way you think and the way you view the world. And the people in your network of friends who don't have that kind of input and don't experience these kind of environments, you don't have to be afraid to invite them. One day, they will be grateful that you took a chance to invite them. One day, at the beginning of Jesus' ministry, he sees this guy named Philip, and he says, Philip, I want you to follow me. I want you to be one of my guys, you know? And Philip's like, okay, but can I invite a friend? And Jesus is like, no, he didn't do that. He said, yeah, you know, go get your friend. Now, listen to this little snippet from the Gospels. Philip found Nathanael, that's his friend, and he told him, we have found the one Moses wrote about. We've been waiting for the Messiah for, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. We think we found him, the one that Moses wrote about in the law and about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. So, you know, Philip's like, oh, this is going to be great. This is going to be great. Don't you know, Nazareth, Nathanael says, can anything good come from there? But, you know, downer. It's like, oh, well, never mind. Sorry I brought it up, you know. Nazareth, now this is so cool. And Philip's like, I don't know how to answer that question. You know, don't you get that? Mega church. Yeah. Well, I heard he said one time, and I had a friend that used to go there, and I heard the parking's a mess, especially if you're at Browns Bridge, you know, you spend like the whole day in the parking lot trying to get out of the second service, you know, and you're like, oh, never mind, sorry, say that. This is awesome. Philip said, just come and see. I don't know about Nazareth. I don't know. I'm not a history guy. I don't know. Does anything good come from Nazareth? I don't know. Never been there. I can't answer your question. That's a good question, Nathanael. But just come and see. If I can just get you there, I think that maybe this won't be as important as it is right now. Now, we are working hard, all of us together, to create a come and see church. And here's why, and this may scare you, it should scare you. You are as close as anyone will ever get to being in the presence of Jesus, because you collectively are the body of Christ. I'm not, you're not, together, somehow we are. And what many of you have discovered, in fact, the reason many of you are here is because somebody said, hey, I want to invite you. And you were like, nah, I don't believe the Bible. I'm a Jesus and mega church. And, you know, I hear they're this and I hear they're that. And I hear they're against this and I hear they're against that. And somehow you were like, okay, I don't know. Just come and see. Just come and see. And they came and they saw. Or you came and you saw. And it wasn't what you thought. And you tried to sit there and be all stiff-armed and resistant, and you looked around, I wonder how much this costs, and I wonder how much money he makes, and I wonder where the kids are, and you know, I know you had all that stuff. And then it was like, something just started to happen, didn't it? It's not magic. It's God's love. And here's what Jesus said. When people are with you collectively, that's as close as they'll ever be to being with me. We want to be a come-and-see church. The only way to remain, continue to be a come-and-see church is to have enough people who are inviting people to come and see that they help keep us on track. And they experience our environments through the eyes and the ears of the people who aren't church people, but the people who gave up on church or gave up on God or had a bad experience, who got bumped out because of a lifestyle choice or bumped out because of something their mama told them or something their parents did. So here's what I need you to do. I need you to be bold with your invitations. I mean, the worst thing that's going to happen is somebody's going to laugh in your face and say, church, that's the worst thing that's going to happen. And you don't even have any friends like that, right? I need you to be bold in your invitations, and here's what's going to happen, I promise. One day, you're going to be bold, and they're finally going to come. And something's going to happen on the inside of them, and something's going to happen on the inside of you, not because of me, not even because of anything we do. It's just the nature of the church. And you're going to cry. And one day you'll have the privilege, hopefully, of seeing someone, one of your friends, baptized. And you will be part of their story. And I want that for you. So, bottom line. You want to know what you can do? If you say, hey, Andy, what can we do? Here's what we can do. And I'd never ask you to do anything I'm not doing. Connect the group. Serve on a team. Give a percentage. Invite a friend. Now, if you have been doing that and you're taking a break, I get that. Some of you have been on 4 or 5 tours of duty, you know, and you're like, I'm just taking a semester off, and, you know, I'm watching online more than attending right now. I totally get that. No guilt, no guilt, no guilt. I'm so grateful for what you've done. You know, life has different cycles and, you know, different seasons. I understand that. For some of you, you took a break about 7 years ago. You've been breaking ever since. And you were a part in the first few years, you know, and you were all gung-ho, and then you kind of took a break because you had been involved for so many years, and then it just got easy to just show up and find your seat and navigate because you got your deal all worked out, and off to lunch you go. We need you, and I'm telling you, you need you to re-engage. Now, if you've been attending here 3 years, now this is very important, if you've been attending here 3 years and you're a Christian, and you listen to a talk like this only because you're in the middle of a row and you couldn't leave because you knew where we were going, and you look at this list and you go, I'm not doing that. Andy, you're persuasive, and I wish you were on my sales team because you're good at that, but I'm telling you, I'm not going to sit in some little Sunday school group and share my feelings, okay? I'm not doing that. And I'm not going to serve. I mean, that would take like an hour and a half of my time. Who do you think I am? I mean, Sunday's my day, okay? So I like my family. We show up and we drop the kids off. We have an hour and 10 minutes. I park right there by the bridge and, you know, we're out of there. You know, I got all that worked out. And I'm going to give. I mean, the bucket comes along. Everybody has to put something there. But I'm not going to give a percentage. You know, I do other things. And are you kidding? Invite? Then I'd be responsible. What if they didn't like it and you said something stupid? So, you know, that's good, but I'm not going to do that. So if you've been here for 3 years and you're like, no, then please hear what I'm about to say. This is, and I'm serious. We can't afford you here. We can't. Okay? This isn't some kind of reverse psychology. I'm as serious as I can be. We can't afford you. You're going to go to heaven when you die. Maybe we'll be neighbors in heaven, but you are dead weight in this organization. You are. And here's the worst thing. I mean, that's okay. That's all the volunteers going, would you get, yeah, come on, tell them, you know. Look, and I'm not trying to run you off. I want you to engage. But here's the, now this should really bother you. It would bother me, maybe it's just me. Here's the problem. If you left, you wouldn't even be missed because we don't know you're here. Okay, I mean, I'm serious. And here's the thing, and don't even email me this, because I know. It's like, well, Andy, you know, you hurt my feelings, and I thought God loved everybody. He does, okay? But here's the deal. Listen. We are on a mission. We are serious. You're sitting in a building that people gave money that they couldn't afford to get it built for you, okay? What happens here is so important, and I'm inviting you to be a part of something important. In fact, I'll tell you this, you're not going to believe me till you're about 75 years old, and then you'll look back and go, he was right. The most important thing you can be a part of, other than raising your family, your kids and grandkids, is a local church. And here's why. Because it was here before you got here, and it'll be here after you're gone. And it is the only thing that reaches into the fabric and the soul and the heart of individuals. Jesus is the hope of the world, and the local church is the expression of his hope in the world. And to have the opportunity to be a part of a church that's gonna get the job done and is committed to the people that Jesus loves, I'm telling you, it's an opportunity. I love to give my money here. I love to give money here. I know where it goes, and I'm telling you, it's an awesome investment of my time and my life and my money. But if you sit back and go, no, that I'm telling you, we need your spot. And here's the email I don't want to get. Well, you even hurt my feelings and da-da-da-da-da, but we're not leaving because our children are plugged in there. Well, lean in close. I got to tell you real quick, okay? Of course your children are plugged in here. Of course they love it here. You know why they love it here? Because there are men and women who give their time and their money to love your children. And they're partnering with you to set an anchor so deep and so wide in the heart of their soul that when they get older, they will not depart from it. They are helping you. And the fact that you would come here and go, nah, I'm not going to do any of that, and let us partner with you, you should be embarrassed. You should be embarrassed. You should be the first to engage, and I know who you are. You, part of you, I'm telling you, okay? You're the same group that complained all the last whole 3.5 years about, well, the 40% of Americans don't even pay taxes, and here I am paying all the taxes and carrying the 40%. That's who you are. And you're doing the same thing at your local church. Now, I don't want you to leave. Come on. I want you to engage. We're doing something big, and we're doing something important, and it's not me. I'm telling you, it is you. It's the model. It's the mission. It's the service. It's all the stuff that makes you love this church. We want to replicate this all over the country and all over the world, and we have the opportunity to do that, but I need you to engage.